Good evening, this is Dr. Daniel J. Guerra, Authentic Biochemistry Podcast. Today is 16 April, 2024. We're covering immune cell biochemistry, section one. This is specifically lymphocyte membrane biochemistry, and we're doing chapter or lecture five. So I'm going to give you a brief overview of the immune response, and then we'll get back into the details. So one way of examining the process, the sequence of events, that starts off with primary exposure to an antigen, which can be from a virus, a bacterium, or any number of polypeptides, nucleic acids, lipids, or even carbohydrates that may be errantly increased where the surveillance module of the macrophage detects this as a foreign antigen and then initiates the response. So the exposure to the antigen then leads to phagocytosis by the macrophage. Then antigen presentation on MHC, protein on the surface of the macrophage. This stimulates directly helper T cells, TH cells. Now, TH cells then can go on to stimulate the B cells, which of course eventually can generate antibody. We'll get to that in a moment. The TH cells can also stimulate cytotoxic T lymphocytes. Now, the TH cells in general are from the CD4 positive lineage. Cytotoxic T lymphocytes come from CD8 lineage. Once the TH cells then are fully activated, because of the antigen presentation, turning on B cells and potentially cytotoxic T lymphocytes, the TH cells can then start to generate memory TH cells. Now, those memory cells can go on to activate further cytotoxic T lymphocytes. But the memory cells are only triggered after a secondary exposure to the antigen. Now, these memory T cells will also generate memory B cells. And those memory B cells can directly then, upon second exposure to antigen, become plasma cells generating antibodies or immunoglobulins. The B cells that were initially stimulated by the helper T cell can also transform into plasma cells, which again are antibody producing, that is immunoglobulin producing. So memory B cells upon secondary antigen activation, or primary B cells by the initial stimulation of helper T cell stimulation, both will generate plasma cells that will generate antibodies specific to the antigen. Now, the memory helper T cells, as I said, can go on to, after secondary exposure, generate active cytotoxic T lymphocytes. And so you have a repertoire of T cell mediated responses working from the initial exposure to antigen from the innate immune cell. Now, here we're talking about macrophages, but remember those can also be dendritic cells. Very common for dendritic cells to present antigen and to fire off all these responses I just went through. Okay? That's just a general overview. We'll get into much more of the details later. Now, upon activation by an antigen, co-stimulatory signals and now the initial phase of cytokine production will start to transform the naive T cells, first by proliferation and then differentiation into all those T helper cells, also known as T effector cells. So specifically at this point, we could say that naive CD4 positive T cells differentiate into conventional TH cells, including TH1, 2, 17, and then the T follicular helper cells. These will all mediate multiple diverse immune functions downstream. Naive CD8 positive T cells differentiate into effector CD8 positive cells to fight against infections and tumors via the generation of interferon gamma, tumor necrosis factor alpha, and multiple cytotoxic molecules. In addition to the immunosuppressive CD4 positive regulatory T cells, those are the Tregs, that form during T cell development, they can also be generated directly from naive T cells and therefore maintain self-tolerance. Okay, so those are some of the general rules that I want you to keep in mind. Now let's go back to some of the details about lipid rafts and lipid induction of this whole process. So short chain fatty acids, these would be fatty acids from C4 to C14, can be derived from multiple sources, including microbiota in the gut and possible fermentation of lipids generating those shorter chain, so-called volatile fatty acids or short chain fatty acids, usually saturated. Now they will regulate T cell accumulation and function. Exogenous long chain fatty acids such as oleate, alpha-linolenic acid can be taken up via the CD36 protein, which is an orphan receptor. And that can then generate an alteration in the tumor microenvironment. Now, when that occurs, there can be an impairment of the function of CD8 positive T cells because of the massive accumulation of either the short chain fatty acids or the long chain fatty acids. So CD8 positive T cells can be corrupted, but there's actually an enhancement of the function of Treg cells from the CD4 positive. So T cells can take up those fatty acids, but they also take up cholesterol directly from, if this is in a tumor, in the tumor microenvironment. That will inhibit, again, the function of CD8 positive T cells. So cholesterol accumulation impedes T cell generation. An oxysterol signal via the EB12 protein to promote migration of T cells to a T cell B cell border. And that contributes to, ultimately, those T follicular cells being generated and proliferating via division. We're not finished yet. Intestinal bile acids, such as lithocholic acid and deoxycholic acid, which are derived from cholesterol, and their further oxidized derivatives like 3-oxo-LCA, isoallo-LCA, and iso-DCA, all modulate T cell differentiation and function. So, for example, 3-oxo-lithocholic acid, in particular, will inhibit Th17 cells, and iso-DCA promotes Treg cell differentiation, peripheral Treg cell differentiation, by suppressing the farnesoid X receptor activity in dendritic cells. So in general, intestinal bile acids can be detoxified by a constitutive androstenedione receptor known as CAR, and that will prevent the activation of all these pro-inflammatory CD4 positive T cell responses. Okay? So you see where lipids are playing a very significant role in regulating particularly pro-inflammatory responses from the CD4 lineage while shutting down the CD8 cells, okay? So, and these again work through multiple receptors. I'm not going to go through all that. I mentioned a few of them though. Okay. Now you know more about how individual lipids can regulate T cell differentiation and activation, and of course, replication. Now, Tregs can be preferentially enhanced by some of these oxalic cholic acids, which are derivatives of cholesterol bile acid formation. And when Tregs become the prominent T cell of the CD4 positive line, that means you're going to get a suppression of the immune response, which can then lead to a subsequent infection cascade. Okay? So you see where high levels of lipid, particularly oxysterols, and any number of short chain or long chain fatty acids can all alter specific ratios of T cells, CD4 positive, CD8 positive, and Tregs from the CD4 positive line, thus corrupting the normal immune response. And where do we get a lot of lipids in circulation? Moving through, say, the CD36 orphan receptor. In humans, that happens because of dyslipidemia, and dyslipidemia is often associated with obesity. Naive T cells typically express about 1 times 10 to the fifth monotypic TCR complexes. Now, PON, T cell receptor ligation with a cognate peptide MHC molecule on an antigen-presenting cell, there is an immunoreceptor tyrosine-based activation motif, an ITAM that we've already talked about, that's present in the cytoplasmic tail of that multi-chain T cell receptor complex. They will become phosphorylated, those tyrosine residues, those and the ITAMs, by that LCK protein I mentioned a few lectures ago. LCK simply stands for lymphocyte-specific protein tyrosine kinase. You also have the FIN protein, which is a proto-oncogene tyrosine protein kinase. Those are both members of the SERC family of protein tyrosine kinases, and that generic family are just called PTKs. So phosphorylated ITAMs, remember those are immunoreceptor tyrosine-based activation motifs, will then function as a docking site for the protein tyrosine kinase ZAP70, zeta chain-associated 70 kilodalton phosphoprotein. That in turn will activate the LCK phosphorylation. Now you have a phospho-ZAP70. Activated ZAP70, the phospho form, then goes on to phosphorylate other proteins, including initially the linker for activation of T cells known as LAT. Then, and sometimes commensurately, SLP76. That's the SERC homology 2 or SH2 domain containing leukocyte protein of 76 kilodalton. Likewise, phosphorylation of phospholipase gamma 1, okay, which we talked about again at the beginning of these lectures. So, this is all part of T cell receptor triggering. Once all that cascade, the phosphorylation cascade, goes on from the T cell receptor via those tyrosine kinases, there's a rapid flux of calcium from internal stores in the endoplasmic reticulum. That activates protein, the increase in calcium cytoplasmically, then activates protein kinase C and calcium-dependent serine threonine phosphatase calcineurin. That calcineurin dephosphorylates the transcription factor NFAT. Remember, that's the nuclear factor of activated T cells, and that will promote its rapid translocation to the nucleus. Same time, RAS and of kappa B, that's the nuclear factor kappa B, and the mitogen-activated protein kinase MAPK are also all tuned up from this T cell receptor induction because of that antigen presentation. So the final result is activated T cells begin proliferating and at the same time secreting their repertoire, specifically according to their class of pro-inflammatory cytokines. Now, phospho MHC TCR ligation. Remember, the MHC is the matrix compatibility complex promoting and also presenting the antigen, promoting the TCR, but presenting the antigen. That ligation between phospho MHC TCR is a mechanosensory mechanism that is the force that's required to trigger T cell receptor signaling. And what is that linked to? Finally, membrane curvature bending. And it's driven by passive and active mechanisms, which give the fully florid, robust T cell receptor triggering. And this has to do with specific classes of anionic phosphoglycerol lipids and sphingolipids, okay? All in association as annular lipids near and associated directly with the T cell receptor and the complex of all the proteins that the T cell receptor works through, all those kinases we just went through, okay? This is where the membrane lipid raft plays a role because the lipid raft is what presented all those polypeptides and those unique lipids I told you were necessary for T cell receptor activation to be there a priori to the antigen reception. So the structure of these interacting receptors and so-called repellers set the stage for passive mechanisms involved in T cell receptor triggering. Okay? So there are receptors and there are repellers. And that will lead to an overall organized T cell response. So the T cell receptor complex is composed of TCR alpha and beta chains. You'll remember this from a couple of lectures ago. Remember, there are six associated non-polymorphic chains: CD3 gamma, CD3 epsilon, CD3 delta, CD3 epsilon heterodimers, and the CD3 zeta homodimer. And another name for that in literature is the double zeta. Or, in fact, one more name. When it was first described, it was just called CD247. Now, they are all arranged in very defined lipid-requiring orientations with respect to that T cell receptor. So the T cell receptor alpha beta extends about 7.9 nanometer from the T cell surface, while the transmembrane domains of TCR and CD3 proteins span about 4 nanometer in depth and 3.5 nanometer in depth. And all of that is supported specifically by the lipid bilayer and by some of those inverted or cross-reverted membrane structural domains, which are all of that generation is a priori, all those different mesomorphic structures because of the membrane lipid rafts carrying specific lipids of either phosphoglycerolipid, sphingolipid with, again, molecular species unique, either polyunsaturated fatty acids or monounsaturated fatty acids, either linked, nitrogen linked, right, amide linkage in the sphingolipids or directly as esters in the phosphoglycerolipids, in conjunction with association of the correct molar equivalents of cholesterol. Okay? So all that's called the supporting lipid bilayer, even though it's not just a bilayer, right? Because it has that hex 1, hex 2 motif laced within the lipid domain. So the T cell surface but isn't already complicated enough, is well endowed with co-receptors. And these are going to play specifying roles for T cell activation. So CD4 consists of four immunoglobulin-like domains, and they are tilted from the cell surface normal plane at an angle of about 70 degrees. CD8 positive cells and CD8 protein itself is a dimeric glycoprotein of, once again, CD8 alpha and beta chains, and each of those are composed of a specific immunoglobulin-like domain connected to a long polypeptide stalk to a transmembrane alpha helical domain. So CD4 and CD8, and remember we do have CD4 and CD8 double positive T cells during early stages, naive stages of development, right? They have low affinity for MHC2 with a KD of about 200 micromolar, whereas MHC1 KD is about 50 and can go as high as 150 micromolar, respectively, okay, between CD4 and CD8. Now, what that finally puts on the system and a constraint is that the phospho-MHC TCR ligation, once that MHC is phosphorylated because of antigen peptide binding and ligating to T cell receptor, will then recruit the LC kinase that is associated with the CD4 and the CD8 cytoplasmic tails to directly the CD3 ITAMs. CD28 is another co-receptor, and it's expressed as a disulfide linker dimer. So the ligation of CD28 with that disulfide to CD80 or to CD86 on the surface of the antigen-presenting cell provides yet another critical co-stimulation for full signal amplification of the T cell via the T cell receptor. Okay. T cells also express a family of adhesion molecules. Let me check my timer. Okay, we're doing well. And these adhesion molecules enhance, as their name would suggest, cell adhesion and amplification of cytokine transcription, translation, glycosylation, and secretion. Now, CD2, that protein, has two immunoglobulin-like extracellular domains and one long proline-rich cytoplasmic tail. I'm going through the adhesion molecules now. CD58 and CD48 on the antigen-presenting cell will serve as a ligand to the CD2 on the T cell. Okay. The lymphocyte function associated antigen, or the LFA1, is one of the most important adhesion proteins in all the T cell armamentarium. And it occurs as a heterodimer of an integrin alpha L, which is also a CD11A, and an integrin beta 2, which is also a CD18. Sorry for all of these different subclasses of protein. It's in the fact they have slightly different synonymous nomenclature, but you need to know that synonymous nomenclature when you're reading the literature. And I'm not expecting you to memorize all this. I'm expecting you to know there are many synonyms for all these proteins involved in T cell receptor interactions. And once you get into protein biochemistry in the immune response, particularly with lymphocytes, it becomes very complex. And you basically have to form tables to know which proteins are being interacted with each other and how those play a role in either repelling or promoting the synapse-associated ligand binding to MHC presentation of antigen, and then whether or not you get a robust inflammatory response during proliferation of the cells, or if that production of pro-inflammatory cytokines is subsequent to the proliferation of the T cells. Because both of those things can occur depending on the strength of the antigen presentation. Okay. Now, the LFA1, getting back into this whole lipid-mediated response, the LFA1 is the lymphocyte function-associated antigen 1. That's an important adhesion molecule, okay? The one I just told you is a heterodimer. There is a low affinity form, which is bent and inactive because it has a closed polypeptide headpiece. Plus, there's a high affinity form, which has the open polypeptide headpiece. That's associated directly with the lipids in the membrane, which are controlling that exposure to that form, that particular form of the polypeptide. Okay. Now, ICAM1, which is more commonly described in biochemistry, that's the intercellular adhesion molecule 1, highly expressed from the antigen-presenting cell surface. So right after T cell receptor ligation, a cytosolic protein, TALEN, binds to the CD18 cytoplasmic tail to convert the bent LFA1, which is relatively inactive, one, to the closed headpiece conformation. So that's called inside-out signaling. Therefore, the ICAM1, which has a low affinity to the closed headpiece form of LAF1 and binding, promotes its opening, which mediates outside-in signaling. That allows TALEN and RAP1, and there's another protein associated with it called KINLING. Those complexes then bind to the cytoplasmic domain of LFA1 and changes the configuration of the protein to that open headpiece mesoform that has a much higher affinity for directly ICAM. Now, the activated ICAM1 LFA1 interactions span a certain intercellular distance between the APC, this is all the synapse, and the T cell surface. Now, that intercellular distance can be between 36 to 45 nanometers. It's a very tight control, and it's been measured many, many times. So now you're starting to get the true detail here how T cell receptors are functioning. And again, we're not bringing in all of the individual molecular species of lipid subclasses. We're talking more about the proteins because much more is known about the proteins. We only know, and only in quotation marks, of course, that very specific subclasses of sphingolipids, phosphoglycerol lipids, and cholesterol just by itself are necessary in the correct mole percent to generate the sequence of events which provide the platform and the movement of the proteins within the plasma membrane to generate all of this APC T cell synaptic interaction. Okay. And that's going to have a lot to do with individual fatty acids associated, either end-linked in the sphingolipids, or therefore generating a potentially also ceramide, right, of the sphingomyelinase activation, which is also involved here, remember. And also the phosphoglycerol lipids as esters, right? Remember, those fatty acids also can be removed by phospholipase activity and be used to generate eicosanoids, which also are going to play a role. Okay. This is a lipid-mediated event, is what I'm telling you. The T cell synapsing with its antigen presentation, with its antigen-presenting cell, either dendritic cell, macrophage, etc. Okay. All right, enough for tonight. This is Dr. Dan Guerra from Authentic Biochemistry Podcast on 16 April 2024, bidding you bye for now.